okay, so you've been doing this professional wrestling thing for, you know, over a decade, but what do you think you've learned that you didn't think was originally possible in the business when you started?
What took me a long time to realize was, you know, something that anyone that's done anything in wrestling will tell you is that it's about making money. And at first, I guess I was, as a wrestling fan, it was just exciting to put on a pair of wrestling boots and to even be in a wrestling ring. So for that first little while, I think I was all caught up in marking out and then, as I've gotten older, I've realized, it's about making money, and it's about putting asses in the seats, and I guess it doesn't sound all that good, you know. That sounds, obviously you should be doing it, but, you know, I love it, and I'm passionate about it, and I do it because I love it, and I would, when it comes down to it, I would do it for free, but at the same time, it's a lot more about making money than I ever, even on this level, even on the independent level. And that means, you know, being on top of things like t-shirts and promo picks and making sure that you're making as much as you can. So that's what I've learned. That's what I came in and kind of had to grow up a little bit, and it's not so much, you know, and then plus the risks that we take for such small reward on the indies, they've taken their toll. You know, there's things that the guys do in the backyard, and it's like they're risking their health. And if they ever wanted to get, you know, working on a pro circuit, they gotta save their health for at least making $50. Never mind making a lot more in the big time. So,
do you think that's strange at all? I mean, because I'm not sure if you watch WWE or, you know, TNA, but the matches on television are severely toned down. You know, they're more like routine matches, you know, guys going through their moveset, not trying to really hurt each other. And then on the indie scene, you have guys that are essentially, like, running 25, 30-minute matches, breaking a sweat and taking, you know, chances and performing high spots. Do you think that's ironic that they have to do all of that just to get to the biggie, to, you know, the big league, and then really tone down your style?
That is interesting, and that's definitely the case. I've done some really really crazy things and stupid things, and I agree with you that it's, you know, obviously they go balls to the wall and on pay-per-views but you know, the guys in WWE are wrestling four or five nights out of the week. So you got to be able to go the next night. You know, the guys in the indies are we have that time to recover, usually. And we're wrestling on the weekends, and so I guess that helps justify the risks taken, because the guys in the WWE have one day to recover before they have the next match. At least we got a week. So that might be part of it, but it definitely is ironic, yeah.
What do you think is the craziest thing you've ever done in the ring that you look back and say, holy crap, why did I do that? I would never, ever do that again.
I don't think that there's anything I've done that I would never do again. So obviously I haven't learned my lesson. But I jumped off a ladder on a table to the outside, and I would say it was 20 feet. Realistically, it was probably about 15. But I remember being in the air and realizing that I might not make it the whole way to the table. So, you know, things like that. And I've jumped off balconies a few times, and the risk, you know, compared to the reward, was probably a little nuts. But at the same time, when you're laying there, and thankfully I've been injury free on those really big high spots, you lay there and you hear holy shit, and it's all worth it. But it's funny, I've probably got injured on more simple things than I have on the high risk stuff, thankfully.
Hey, I noticed you just said, you know, if you were on a wrestling show, you would have said 20 feet. From my experience, from all the professional wrestlers that I've spoken to, even though, in a way, the fourth wall has been broken for quite some time, and, you know, people out there know that it's somewhat choreographed and things like that, wrestlers still kind of have this this facade, in a way. They try and keep things to themselves as often as possible. Why do you think that still is? I mean, I know the sport is kind of entrenched in that carny atmosphere. That's how it started. But why do you think wrestlers still have that, you know, that personality?
Well, gone are the days where there's really any question as to what, you know, whether it's quote-unquote real. At least even, what, you know, for me as a fan growing up, there was still some question as to whether it was all, you know, all decided in the back or not. And now, even the WWE themselves will tell you that it's entertainment, and no one is trying to insult anybody's intelligence, which, getting off track here, still blows my mind when I get, you know, when someone talks to me that's not really a wrestling fan, and they say to me, "So is that fake?" And it's like, that question was relevant 25 years ago, not today. So it still blows my mind that people ask that. And most wrestlers, we add about 10 or 20 pounds to our weight. And when I say how many people are in the building, there's sometimes not as many people in the building as I say, and I definitely think that there's plenty of other promoters out there guilty of it. It's more just slight embellishments these days, just to make us seem a little bit bigger, a little bit better than we are. I suppose there's that desire still to work the people a little bit. We know they don't believe most of it. I guess it makes it that much more special when you've got them, and when you've, you know, made it so that they still can suspend their disbelief despite wrestling being as exposed as it is.
Okay, how hard? I mean, I know you mentioned before, you know, when you first started out, you were kind of marking out, you know, just being in the ring and participating and things like that. How easy is it for you to kind of get lost in your character? I mean, I've interviewed professional wrestlers over the years, and some refuse to let me call them by their real name. I had to call them by their stage name. You know, things like that. Have you encountered other wrestlers that are like that, that get that you know, emotionally connected to their character? I mean, how do you feel about your
character? Yeah, I'll be honest, man, I've struggled with it. Most people don't even know my real name. Even at my day job, I'm a bartender, and on the schedule and everything, it says Scotty Mack. So, thankfully, I have, you know, friends and family around me that allow me to be. I am somewhat of my wrestling character outside the ring, and it's not necessarily been the most positive thing for my personal life. But it's kind of the way it's gone, and I guess it's what makes me happy. The wrestling world is a lot more fun than the real world. So, as much of the wrestling world that I can incorporate into the real world, I like to, because it's, you know, around where I live, people know me as, you know, Scotty Mack the wrestler. I'm not just that guy Scott. I'm not like just some dude. If someone needs to know who I am, they say, you know, that wrestler guy, and people know. So it's as a fan, you always, you know, thinking you're going to be a wrestler one day, that's what you always want to be known as, and I think we just try to live that as much of our life as we can, and I guess, again, that's the mark coming out of us.
Okay, you said the experience hasn't been so positive at times. Do you care to, like, elaborate or share anything?
Just getting caught up in my, you know, womanizing, persona and putting that before other people's feelings, and I think I've been quite selfish a lot of the time. So you know, it's just like I said, it's more fun being Scotty Mac than, you know, than Scott. So it ends up happening. It's you know, I've kind of tried to tone that down a little bit in the last few years. My girlfriend right now is a wrestler, and she's in the business and she's around it, and I guess that's made it easier for me to stop being Scotty Mac the womanizer outside of the ring. I have an easier time now leaving that for the 20 or 30 minutes I'm in front of the people, and then kind of go back to normal otherwise. But it took a super cool chick to make that happen.
I've spoken to a bunch of other professional wrestlers over the years that say, you know, regardless of, you know, if they have an injury or regardless of how they're feeling about, you know, their personal life and things like that, when their music hits and they walk out and they get into the ring, everything goes away and they're kind of caught in the moment. How do you feel when you hit the ring?
That's exactly right, and I've said almost those same words on several other interviews, and I've said it to other people. Like, I've had times where there's wrestlers and there's things going on. They go, okay, I got to take some time away from wrestling, and I think to myself, really? Like, when shit's going on in my life outside of wrestling and everything else sucks, wrestling's the one thing that doesn't. Wrestling's the one thing that when I get there, I can, you know, I can usually leave everything else at the door, and if it wasn't for wrestling, I'd go nuts, you know. That's the part that keeps things good. Everything else could suck. You know, your girlfriend could break up with you that day, and you lose your day job. As long as I got a wrestling show to go to, I'm happy.
Okay, you've held several titles over your career, especially the NWA Canada Championship. What's that like to hold a title as prestigious and, you know, historic as the NWA title, and like kind of you were the champion of Canada for quite some time? So.
Yeah, I do take a lot of pride in that. I'm the longest reigning NWA Canadian champion of all time, it does mean a lot to me. And in a time where there's a lot of wrestlers that'll say to you that a belt is just a prop, and that, you know, they don't mind losing it because now their bag's lighter. It's bullshit, because a title is who said, I think they said, you don't win a wrestling title, you earn it, and that means that whoever is in charge, and in this case the NWA, which means a lot to me, has decided that, you know, I'm the representative of wrestling in Canada for them, and that means a lot. So I have no problem saying I love that title. It's pretty much, you know, when it's in my possession, it's my baby, and wrestlers that are champions, whether the outcomes are predetermined or not, it still should mean a lot. And you know, as much as I knew going in that I was gonna win, when the referee's hand hits three, it still feels pretty damn good. You get handed that title and you raise it above your head, it feels pretty good.
Okay, Eric Bischoff said in an interview a couple of years ago that it's difficult to really, you know, wow an audience now because they've seen everything. So it's very difficult, you know, to create new moves and to, you know, just be different in the ring. How do you pride yourself on being different?
I'm not going to say that I'm all that different than a lot of guys. I mean, I've taken a lot from the guys I admired and idolized growing up. It is difficult. I watch a lot of old wrestling. We've been watching a lot of wrestling in my house from around 1985, and I listen to the people just pop and go crazy for just a drop kick or a top rope cross body, or sometimes even less. And and the place goes bananas, and it blows my mind. And now you got to damn near break your neck, or you got to jump off something that's, you know, 20 feet and do 6 flips before the, you know, some crowds will react. And that, you know, it sucks for us, but it's the way she goes. And for me, it's not about the high risk maneuvers. I throw those in when it's needed. What makes me different is just my ability to connect with the people and make them react. I don't go out there and hope that I'm going to get a reaction. I go out there and I demand it. So I know that when I walk out there that I'm going to get the reaction I desire. If it doesn't happen initially, if it's a new crowd, it doesn't happen initially, it'll happen, you know, within minutes. It's all about connecting with the people and making them feel like they're watching something special.
Okay, so for the fans at home that haven't seen you perform yet, how would you describe your in-ring style? What are some of the moves that you implement?
I pride myself on being a really good all-around wrestler. I can work any style. If we have a wrestler around here. His name's Moondog Manson. He's the Pacific Northwest's hardcore legend, if you will. And it was years ago, and it was coming up. It was me against Manson, and a fan posted on the forum that he was unsure how good this match would be because of our difference in styles. And that was like a challenge. It's like, don't think because we do different things that it's not going to work. And we went out there and had match of the night, like I knew we would. And so I pride myself on being able to bring out the best in everyone I work with. And I usually finish a match with a super kick or a springboard leg drop. But as a heel, I think I miss my springboard leg drop more than I hit it. The people love to see a heel land on his ass. I like to be able to mix it up with anybody and whatever style you want, I can bring it.
Okay, do you think being from Canada that people from outside of your country, people in the U.S. expect a certain type of style from you, considering, you know, how technically proficient many of the Canadian wrestlers are that, you know, hit, you know, TNA and the WWE?
That's an interesting question. I've never thought that they expected something different from me. I do take pride though in being Canadian, and the fact that Canada has contributed a lot of amazing wrestlers, to the industry. When we were in Portland, I was doing TV in Portland for about 3 or 4 years. And there was a carload of us Canadians that would go out every month, and we taped 4 weeks of TV. Once we ran into some border problems, we weren't able to go anymore because the state doesn't want us, you know, quote unquote, taking their jobs. But I know that the Portland wrestling fans sorely missed us, because I have no problem saying that the Canadians were the best part of that show. And take that for what it's worth.
Okay, who are some of the people that you've worked with that you're proud of? Like some of the matches that you put together?
I was very lucky very early on. The ECCW paired me with, like, I got to work with Christopher Daniels right off the bat. And he carried me to some great matches, because at the time I was very green and I really didn't know a whole lot, and he made it so that we really had some killer matches. I've got Tony Kazina. I've had some amazing matches with Davey Richards. One of them at Pat Cup, Pacific Cup in 2007, I think. Just really, really killer matches with Davey. We have good chemistry. Daniel Bryan, I guess. I they put me over him in the 2003 Pacific Cup, which was very cool, and very cool that Daniel Bryan had put me over, because he was definitely one of the top indie guys at the time, and everybody knew that he had a very, very bright future. So to come in and put over a green guy like me was very cool. And, worked with Buff Bagwell and the Honky Tonk Man. Both were very cool. Brian Christopher, and who else? Yeah, I mean, those are the guys. Guys like Daniel Bryan and Christopher Daniels and Davey Richards are all, I can't say enough good things, and there's a reason why they're held in such high regard. Just amazing wrestlers.
Okay, and I believe 2005 you had a 3-day tryout with the WWE. What was that like, and how well do you think you were prepared for that?
Well, it was 3 days. It was a pay-per-view, and Raw and SmackDown. The pay-per-view, it was Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho. They're having a ladder match, so there's really no ring time available to any of the local talent, you know, and for the agents to look at us. Then the next day was Raw in Seattle, and I guess the Key Arena presented a lot of big problems with them getting the set inside, and so that they ended up getting set up super late. So again, no ring time for the locals. And then the third day was SmackDown in Spokane, and we finally got in the ring. But they needed to decide which three guys were going to take on Khali that night. So they had, you know, they said, okay, you and you get in there, have a tag match, and you know, very intimidating. You got guys like Arn Anderson and Mike Rotundo and all that around the ring, and you know, not to mention some WWE superstars, and we didn't get a lot of time in there, and I don't think I necessarily got a chance to impress as much as I would have liked. But it was good enough for them to put me on TV that night, and unfortunately, I think my size or lack thereof was, you know, I didn't get as much of a look as I would have if I was, you know, 6'2". I don't want to blame it on that, but it just goes to show that if you are a guy my size, or like, you know, Evan Bourne or Rey Mysterio or Daniel Bryan, that you really, really got to blow them away, and you got to take advantage of your the opportunities given to you know, to get a contract, to get more than just a squash on SmackDown. So I'm getting older, and my time may have passed. I'd like to think I got another. I could still give it another shot. Hopefully, there was one other time I was out in OVW for a weekend in 2000. I think that was 2007 as well. And again, there I didn't impress nearly as much either as I would have liked. And I think that was just intimidation. I was more prepared for the when I was at the TV tapings, but again, there just wasn't a lot of time for them to take a look at us.
Okay, so what do you think the future holds for you? Where would you like to be? Where would you like to finish up?
Well, ECCW is mine now. I bought it with two partners, so I take a lot of pride in us putting out some really, really great indie shows, and we have a lot of great talent, so I would like ECCW to get bigger and better. But it's, you know, for me, my girlfriend Tenille ended up with a WWE developmental deal earlier this year, so she's hoping to be in Florida by the new year, and I would love to join her. So it's just a matter of you know, getting things taken care of at home here, and hopefully spending a lot of time in Florida. And, you know, who knows what could happen there. I'm 32. I'm older than they'd like me to be, but you know, there's still that part of me that hopes that that I could have a run in WWE. Otherwise, I love Vancouver. I love where I live. I love ECCW. It makes me really happy to take a lot of pride in what we have going here. You know, I want to keep that going and keep putting out these awesome wrestling shows.
Okay, for people that are interested in more information, do you guys have a website? Do you guys have any DVDs available or anything like that?
Yeah, man, I appreciate you asking. ECCW.com. We have a lot of DVDs available. We have our Pacific Cup last month, and that featured Kyle O'Reilly, who's doing really well in Ring of Honor right now. Features Nicole Matthews, who is doing really well in Shimmer. And then not to mention, you know, a bunch of other DVDs with Tennille Taylor. You know, she got her developmental contract earlier this year, so we got DVDs with her on it. You know, if you pick up the DVDs for Kyle or for Tennille or for Nicole, you're going to see a whole lot of talent in the Pacific Northwest that you probably haven't seen before. And it's, you know, the wrestling world doesn't pay nearly enough attention to the talent we have out here. So I think we just got to get a little bit louder and make our presence felt.
Okay, so for the people that are interested in becoming professional wrestlers, can you just describe what it's like to be an indie wrestler? As far as, like, day-to-day and the toll on your body and having to work a side job at the same time, what's that all like?
Well, let's just say there's a lot, there's not a lot of glory on the indies, and you know, go to a reputable school. I'm saying if you're in Canada, you're not going to beat Lance Storm's training, not to mention his, you know, he's still got a really close relationship with the WWE. You know, go to a reputable trainer and take advantage of the opportunities you get. Take advantage of momentum. If there's any sort of buzz about you, make a bigger buzz. Don't get content with being a big fish in a small pond. If you're the top guy, you know, in your company, in your small town or whatever, that really doesn't mean a whole lot. It's you got to, you know, if you're lucky enough, opportunities will come. But smart ones make their own opportunities. And you know, two people that have done that from here are Kyle O'Reilly and Tennille Taylor. They're our most successful exports. And that's because they didn't make wrestling their number one priority. They made it their only priority, and they refused to fail. And they, you know, they gave it their all, and every single day we're doing something to work towards their goal. So it's tough, but if you want it bad enough, you can, and you got talent, then you can make it happen.
Okay, there's more though to professional wrestling than obviously performing in the ring. You know, there's a lot to do with that. With the wrestler's culture, things like, you know, not, you know, talking about your matches too loudly afterwards, shaking all the hands of all the boys before and after your matches, things like that. Can you just describe how hard it is to kind of just get acclimated to those politics and to use them, you know, to your advantage?
If you're conscious of things like that, it shouldn't be hard at all. You want to be easy to work with. You want to be showing respect to those in the locker room. I don't tolerate anything less in our locker room here. We got to respect those that have come before you, and respect everyone that you're working with. And another thing is appreciate all the people that are helping to make these indie shows possible. You got so many people that are volunteering their time, whether it's on the ring crew or working the concession or working the merchandise table or taking your ring jacket to the back, and all these people that there's not enough money coming in to pay them all properly, and they're doing it because they want to be a part of this, and you gotta take the time to thank them and show them the same respect, you know, because you know, you need someone to press play on your music. You need someone to sell your t-shirts. You need someone to take your sunglasses to the back so they don't get broken or stolen. So and appreciate the promoter. Not all promoters are slimy and trying to take your money. A lot of promoters, they just want to they want to put on a great wrestling show, and they want to make the people happy, and they want to make the wrestlers happy. And I don't think that there's enough wrestlers out there that appreciate, you know, the sacrifices and the risks that promoters take just to run in such a difficult time. So that's definitely a message I'd like to get out there.